I'm Christian Scheller. Welcome to my podcast, an enthusiastic ramble through whatever has taken my interest the past week or so. Expect technology, games, history, travel, geekery, and as always, much, much more. Welcome to another Chinchilla Squeaks. This week I have another interview with Amanda Brock talking about the upcoming State of Open Conference in London, which actually sounds like an amazing event. I may be able to make a tiny part of it, but even if I can't, even if you can't, it will be also online. But we'll come to that in the interview. First, I have a few links for you and then a few updates from me, as always. First, I recorded episode 2 of a new video and podcast I am making on generative AI. And around that, there's been a spate of news around ChatGPT in particular. Microsoft had already funded some of it and is now funding it even more, probably with an eye on monetizing it and turning it into a proper commercial product on Azure, which makes a lot of sense, I guess. And they recently reported that Microsoft is weighing up a $10 billion stake in OpenAI, which would involve not just them, but others too. They already invested some in it already, $1 billion in July 2019, and they now pretty much have exclusive usage rights for commercial usage of it. And that would mean Azure kind of gets the best in class on that sort of service. So it could be very interesting. Anyway, that's that. Enjoy these tools, these services whilst you can, because they're all going to get monetized very quickly. I think I also heard about the Midjourney commercialization version recently as well. So they're all trying to make up for all the money they're losing in the very near future. So that came up around research for that new show. And I think we probably should have the episodes out by the next time I release a Chinchilla Squeaks. So you can look forward to that. That is talking about the beginning of something. Let's talk about the end of something. It's been reported fairly widely in the past couple of weeks that Twitter rather unexpectedly and rather abruptly shut down third-party API access to many of the tools, well, all of the tools. I have been using Twitterific for some time. Strangely, my version seemed to limp on for a bit, and then it also got shut down. They weren't the only one, but that is by far one of the longest running and one of the most loved on macOS. And there's it's a sad but also very interesting post from Sean Heber on the Icon Factory blog talking about how it's been so badly handled, but also asking people not to ask for refunds because it's not really their fault. And if you ask for a refund, the company is out of pocket for something that it had nothing to do with whatsoever, which effectively means you may have just paid for an application you can no longer use. I think I paid for it a long time ago, so I got plenty of years of service out of it. But I don't know. I don't know who was buying third-party Twitter applications in the past year or so, but I'm guessing people were. But still, it's sad to see that that is now the end of an era. And now there are kind of high-quality proprietary Mastodon clients that are being released. So I guess that's where all the companies will switch their efforts and hopefully their income too. But we'll see. End of an era, kind of sad. I don't mind the Twitter native client on Mac, but it's fine. But it's not quite as nice as the options. And it's not, you know, it's not good to not have options, I suppose, is the argument. On the subject of options, I'm also rounding out a post and video on alternative browsers to Chrome, Chromium, and Safari. Well, they're basically the two main ones, I suppose. And as part of that, I found a really good post from, it's not a new post, but it was updated in January on the GitHub of Eilenberg. Alphonse Eilenberg. There we go. Eilenberg.github.io. He has a handful of timeline posts comparison of operating systems, tree of operating systems, timeline of desktop environments, timelines of Linux distributions, etc., etc. But the one that was relevant to me at this time was a history of browser engines, and you can kind of scroll through all the browser engines from 1990 to now and see sort of when they were most popular, when they faded out, which ones overlapped, and which one led to which, etc., etc. It's quite cool. And it also reflects the market share as well. And it's amazing how you see some have lasted a long time with next to no market share. Some have been like a massive blip and then gone again, and then et cetera, et cetera. And actually he's tracking some of the more obscure ones, some of the ones I have mentioned in the forthcoming post, although some that do not as well. Although he kind of lumps a lot of the Chromium ones into one, which maybe is sort of unfair to do so, but maybe it's also hard to separate them. I'm not sure. And I can see a few browsers here that I was always a proud user of in the past. Anyway, next big topic was kind of update to the open gaming license controversy coming from Wizards of the Coast and Dungeons and Dragons, basically. I caught up a lot with back episodes of the Sly Flourishes podcast, getting up to date on all of this. And it seems that in the past couple of days, Wizards of the Coast has backpedaled on a lot of what they initially said, and in some respects changed the licensing for the better. But they've, you know, it is often this case when you backpedal, but you've inadvertently caused so much furore and upset in a community that it almost doesn't matter anymore. It's too late. It doesn't matter what you fix. People have jumped already. And so I've got a series of posts talking about the various stages of this, when it first happened, the updates, and now the kind of more recent updates. But this has, of course, been a boom time for other publishers and other game engines. And one of the other things I want to highlight from Bundle of Holding, who have had many great RPG bundles, they currently have until the 8th of February a standard bundle title, which is a rather uninteresting name, but it's pretty much a D&D alternatives bundle of Fate, Dungeon Crawl Classics, Hackmaster, Demon Lord, Tiny Dungeon, Five Torches, a whole bunch of them. There's a whole bunch of collections of different bundles you can get here of good alternatives to Dungeons and Dragons. I sort of wonder how many of these will end up being successful or not. Whilst many of us deep into role-playing have always known there's really good alternatives, Dungeons and Dragons has such market share and such sort of mind share, I sometimes feel like it's hard for a lot of the others to compete. You know, people don't mention these games in mainstream media like Stranger Things and et cetera, et cetera. But we'll see. We'll see. This could be the time when it changes, the straw that breaks the camel's back, etc., etc., etc. We will see. But good to see things happening for the positive kind of on the OGL side, and also for the positive in other people and other companies finding benefit in finding alternatives as well. On the subject of games, two posts to wrap out, to round out here. One from Jimmy Mayer, who I've featured a few times in the past, just published Sequels in Strategy Gaming Part 1. He's talking about the development and the reception of Civilization 2, which I remember very fondly. I think I played Civ 2 for a very long time. I think I played that until I upgraded to maybe about Civ 4 or 5, to be perfectly honest with you. So I have very fond memories of Civ 2, and it was more successful than Civ 1, which is not surprising. I think it was probably the breakthrough version in some respects. It was released in the mid-90s, 1996, and it can look dated now, but it's still, yeah, I still have very fond memories of it. You can't really find versions of it to play anymore, which is a shame, but you could sort of find free alternate versions of it, which I guess is the best alternative, as we're talking about, alternatives, open alternatives, all episodes, really. And it sold 3 million copies in the first 5 years after its release, which for those days is pretty high, especially when you had such small teams, I guess. Finally, in video games. This is from Ex Berliner, a magazine I am a subscriber to here in Berlin. It's an English language magazine of Berlin from René Blixer, covering digital versions of Berlin in video games from Minecraft to Wolfenstein and everything in between, racing games, Call of Duty, Indiana Jones, and games I've not heard of, but still it's kind of fun to see. And the games vary in flavor, shall we say, from first-person shooters to transport games to historical games. But it's quite cool to see how the city is rendered in glorious, well, everything from about 8-bit to 64-bit here, I think. But if that interests you, then take a look. That was my links for the episode. And now to my interview with Amanda Brock from Open UK. I am joined again by Amanda Brock from Open UK. We spoke not so long ago and you were working on a few things at the time. I was looking on the website to remind myself. I think you had a survey.
Oh, that would have been last May.
Okay. So, yeah. And you've also since then done awards. So give us a quick recap of the past 10 months. You've had several changes of government as well, which may or may not have changed.
Well, it did actually impact us. I'll explain why in a second. So as you say, I'm Amanda Brock. I'm the CEO of Open UK. And I spoke to you, Chris, about six, seven months ago, I think. And it's great to be back. Thank you for having me back. Over the last year, we actually have a gratitude journal, which is our annual report that I haven't pushed out yet. And I need to do that. So you remind me to do it today. It's just waiting for me to press a button. And we look back at the year with each month where we had something happening and how exciting it was. In September, we were supposed to have a big event that we had to push because of the Queen's funeral to October. So it's the only month that we don't have something, you know, to celebrate. And as you mentioned, we did a survey back in May. We had a report come out in June. We had a Baron's Supper in June that should have taken place in the House of Commons in January. So controversially, we held it in June, which was the date they gave us. And I have to say, it's one of the best I've been to. It was really good fun. Then you mentioned the awards. Each year we celebrate success in open technology, so software, hardware, data. And we had 9 categories of awards, which took place at the House of Lords on the 30th of November. Wow. Now, the excitement of that for me was I didn't get to go. I organized them for like 6 months and then I had COVID. And I watched from afar as 100 open source people got dressed up and partied in the House of Lords. We also did a New Year's honors list. And this is something that's like terribly British to have an honors list, right? And it's a royal thing. And I did check that we weren't committing treason when we did a pastiche of it in
true. I think it's the only thing you could still, they still have capital punishment for in the UK. So you've got to be careful.
We checked and we were all right. So we created this Open UK honours list 3 years ago as a, it was really an antidote to Brexit. And we thought by having that, we would do something that cheered everybody up on the, you know, the brink of New Year and send the celebratory thing out. And we did it again this year. It always gets big traction on social media. And this year we had 100 influencers from open source software specifically. And we worked with Analytica, who helped us put that together using algorithms they have. And we got this 100 top influencer list. But I was really worried about pushing it out because it would be such an anticlimax for everybody who's involved if it then doesn't get traction on social and people aren't celebratory, which is what it's all about, is the celebration. And actually, it worked really well. So despite the fact that many people are moving over to Mastodon, we still had a very successful Twitter, Mastodon and LinkedIn campaign around it. So really pleasing. I think that the thing that's best about doing stuff like this and seeing people being recognised for all their hard work. And of course, with open technologies, a lot of it is community and volunteering. So there's a guy whose mum posted on Twitter about how proud she was of him being given his award, his honour. So it sort of made my new year, because my new year is spent pushing this out on social and then sharing and commenting. And, you know, it's probably not everybody else's idea of fun. So we've had a really productive 6 months at Open UK. We decided back in March, April last year, we wanted to have a conference. And my board sent me off to build a conference. And in July, I met with IEEE, who are our headline sponsor. Yeah. So really, for the last 6 months, a huge focus for us has been the conference. And we held a day in October, shifted from the Queen's funeral, on infrastructure and curation of open source software. which this was a build-up for. So it was a build-up to the conference. A
couple of quick things. Just out of interest, because I did actually, I haven't lived in the UK for a very long time, but I did study computer science in the UK. Mm-hmm. And I remember there being the British Computer Society, but you have the IEEE as a sponsor. Does BCS still exist?
BCS not only exists, but we'll talk a lot more about the conference, right? Because this conference is, it's not a conference. The headline statement, my conference is not a conference, but we have 46 tables in the venue and we have 5 floors. So I was laughing before we came on about, you know, what have I done to myself? Other conferences are happy they get a floor. I've pretty much got the whole building. There's somebody else who had booked a little bit of it before we took it. So we had to leave them there. So we have 5 floors plus a 6th floor with a press area and the outside space. And if that wasn't enough, there's a lawn next to Westminster Abbey.
Yep.
And I'm having festival tents built with an open fire in them, because you do.
And it is in February, so you probably
will. It is in February. Well, and what I mean more, though, is, you know, who needs all this space? But our community needs all this space if they're out in force. And it should be, you know, it should give the vibe. It should set the scene from the moment you get there that this is not your traditional conference. This is something for everybody and a lot more festively and interactive in its vibe. And we have, after IEEE came on board, a number of other sponsors have come on board who've made it possible for us to have these cheap tickets at 199. But back to your original question about BCS, BCS are actually hosting a table. So they're one of the 46 organisations who'll be there.
I would imagine they have a lot less funds. I have been an IEEE member periodically and they're endlessly bugging me about becoming a member again.
Really? Okay.
And most of you just wanted the magazine. And you can't just get the magazine.
That I can't help you with, unfortunately.
Because I don't really benefit from it living in Germany so much. So, anyway, so we're talking about the state of OpenCon. February 7th to 8th at the intriguingly titled Queen Elizabeth II Centre, which, of course, now takes on a slightly different dynamic. And we were just discussing as well. I think I have been to an event there before.
Yeah.
It's right opposite House of Parliament and
it is indeed.
Westminster Abbey. So kind of a cool spot as well. You can always see if there's any hot news coverage of some controversy with politicians on that lawn, actually, I think. With someone interviewing them. You're timing it just after FOSDEM, which is happening for the first time in person in 2 years.
Three.
In Brussels the weekend before. So was there a temptation to host it in Brussels as well?
Or? Absolutely not.
No, okay.
No. Can you imagine? I mean, what we're doing here is creating for the UK.
For sure.
A conference that it's not had. We want the international folk to come and join us, but we've not had anything at scale in a very long time.
Yeah.
For the open communities.
And there is the Eurostar, of course, which is nice.
There is, I may well be on it because we also have a stand at FOSDEM, and we are part of the FOSDEM fringe, even although we're in London. So we're technically listed as part of FOSDEM. Yeah. We're just expanding the reach. I'm a great fan of FOSDEM.
Yeah.
So we've been huge supporters of them at Open UK. And they are they do brilliant work. I mean, it's huge. It's incredible. But it's a very particular thing. There is only one FOSDEM.
It really is.
I also really like Scale, which is in LA and is happening in March.
Yep.
And All Things Open, which happens in October in North Carolina. And for me, these are the three big international community events that I try to go to. And it's always a real honour to be able to speak at them if I'm allowed.
I've pitched talks to All Things Open so many times. And guess what year I finally got a talk accepted?
2020.
Last year, when I still couldn't go.
Oh, I went last year. It was great. So Todd, who is the founder of All Things Open, has been on our advisory board. And Ilan, we didn't manage to connect. Ilan organises Scale. We didn't manage to connect and get him on the advisory board, but I think he's going to come onto it for next year. Mm. And he's given us some guidance. You remind me, I have to chase him because he has these amazing images of penguins that they used, you know, tuxes, basically. Yep. They've got their own tux brand and they used them on stickering on the lifts for Scale last year. And they're sharing them with us so we can use them in our crash.
On your crash?
Our crash, yeah. So we're going to have these cute little penguins all the way from LA on our crash.
Nice. Before we dig into some of the speakers and things, let's then you said it's not a conference. What do you call it? An unconference? What's the vibe then?
So the vibe is very much a festival of open technology. Okay. So we have different parts to it. We have 8 tracks because Sustain OSS is hosting a conference within a conference.
Yeah.
We have an unconference, as you maybe didn't realize that when you mentioned unconferences. So we have an unconference.
Well, you mentioned the tables, which sounded like an unconference to me.
So, well, we've got an unconference room, which Paula Kennedy, Hannah Foxwell, and Terence Eden are organizing. We have an open hardware room. We have an open data room. And the open data room is being hosted by the Open Data Institute. So the ODR are partnering with us. And then we have open source software rooms. So we've got government law and policy. We've got platform engineering. Well, actually, government law and policy is being hosted by Judy Parnell, who is the head of director of standards at the BBC. Mm-hmm. So quite an interesting woman and brought amazing content together. And each room has got a CFP chair, a CFP committee, and a host. And that whole CFP process isn't so common in the UK. A number of people involved have been really surprised by the fact that we have it. And I know we have it at some of the smaller open source conferences. It just doesn't, people have never heard of it before. The venue had never heard of it. Some of the people working in other spaces who don't just do open technology had never heard of it.
So explain that again. Sorry, maybe I missed, the way FOSDEM does it, you have
a call for proposals for each bit. So, yeah. And it means that everybody gets a chance to pitch what they would like to talk about, and it makes it much more equitable, and it opens things up and improves diversity and all sorts of things, rather than you just go to the folk that you know to bring in the content you know. So we've had that across 6 tracks. So I was talking about the open source software one. So we've got government law and policy, which Judy is hosting. And then we have platform engineering, which Liz Rice, one of our superstars, is hosting. Great speakers in that. And then we have a security track, which Sal Kamich is hosting. And they are working with Andrew Martin, who most folk in open source will know on the security side as a CFP chair. That security room is unbelievable. I'm not joking. So we've got speakers that you would spend much more than our conference ticket to just see that track. We have Guy Pajani, the founder at SNCC, who is very kindly coming out of his holiday to come and join a session. We've got the assistant director from the White House for cybersecurity keynoting. We've got Eric Brewer from Google, aka Brewer's Law, flying in to be in the plenaries and also to speak in that. We've got Sarah Novotny from Microsoft, and the list goes on. I mean, that room is just like the A-list of open source cybersecurity. Not to say the other rooms aren't great, but it's just the names in that room are phenomenal.
I can also see Jimmy Wales.
That's the next day. Jimmy Wales is keynoting for us. So if we go to the plenaries, we've got Salima Van, who's a director from the UN. We've got Camille Stewart Gloucester, who is the deputy director for cybersecurity from the White House. She's got a long title, which that is not, but she's the deputy director from the White House. The White House are flying 2 people in for us. We have Eric Brewer will be part of that. And then we've got a bunch of people who will be doing short keynotes as part of the plenaries, including Damani, who's coming in from Boeing in Phoenix. But there is a story behind that whole piece about Boeing, and I'll tell you a little bit about that in a minute. We've just got the most incredible speakers. So we have an amazing conference that you would pay multiples of the $199 we're charging for, right? It's really, if it was a commercial conference, it would be towards the £1,000.
Yeah.
And you're in a commercial venue, you're in London's best venue for conference speakers, you'd pay that for. I sound like I'm selling it to you. I probably am in a way. But then the thing that matters to me is that it's not just that. So we have all this space and we have 46 tables with projects, primarily projects and not-for-profits and foundations are the bulk of those tables. Then we've got a few enterprises. It's great to see some from the UK taking tables. People like Control Plane and Jetstack will be there. So we've got an opportunity for you to go and speak to the peoples. And for those that haven't seen these kind of conferences before, these open source community conferences, we have tables, very basic, no fancy booths. Nobody is having a fancy booth. And you can go and chat to people from those organizations to find out more, to find out how to get involved. So people like Ruth Cheesley from Motic, we've got Yocto Foundation, we've got the Open Source Initiative, we've got KDE, we've got GNOME. Yeah, we've got data on Kubernetes, you know, people like that, having tables that can show you what they do, they can talk about the communities, talk about how to get involved. People like GitHub, and they're also putting an AI booth in now. Their AI booth has come from their conference in San Francisco, and it does AI painting. The BBC are doing an experience. So as well as the tables, we're calling this whole piece the DX, the delegate experience. So as well as the tables where you go to learn and hang out and meet people, we have these experiential things like that AI painting booth. There's 12 of them. We also have from the BBC a project they've worked with the musician Gruff Reason. I think it's Griff, even though it's spelled Gruff, and it's called Seeking New Gods. And the Science Museum did that as one of their night projects, you know, when they have those evenings you can go to. So that was the whole evening. But that's one of these experiences. And then I think the one that everybody gets most excited about is that Boeing are bringing us a VR experience of flight simulation and space. So you know where you'll find me. But, you know, it's not just the normal stuff from a conference. It's fun. None of these things are charged for once you get in there. Yeah. It's something that, you know, it's part and parcel of the experience. There won't be fancy catering because I spent the budget on things for people rather than on food.
It's so expensive for that
kind of thing. It's so expensive, right? There's great places to go for food around the corner. There will be food. It just won't be lots of it or fancy. But it was how we kept the ticket price down to the 1.9. That and the sponsorship. I mean, the sponsors have been incredible. So if you imagine that you've got a conference where you have breaks, we don't have the normal breaks, so that the whole thing has been organized in chunks. So between 10 and 12 on days 1 and 2, and the keynotes on day 2 are at 9:15, I think. But 10 and 12, then 1 to 3, and then 4 to 5:30. So I have ADHD, and half the people I know in this space do as well. None of us can sit for hours on end. So we've done it so that there's decent sized breaks, but it's partly so that you're not sat there for hours, but partly so that you can use these things so that you have the time to go and talk to the people on the tables. And I suspect that a lot of people will make new friends or new contacts as they chit chat around these experiences. You know, it's a way to open up the conversation rather than just walking up to a stranger. And then we've also worked really hard on amenities, and we've got things like doggy daycare and a creche and a prayer room and, you know, lots of those kind of things to make it possible for people. We've got workspaces that if people have to go and do their email, you know, they can go and do that, and they're available to everybody. We also have a party on the first night for everybody from, I think it's 5:30 to 8:30 with the entertainment. And again, it's not going to be super fancy. We're in a recession, but you know, it is something that is there for everybody. And then I suppose the last thing I would say is we're trying to make it inclusive. So for us, sustainability and DEI are the heart of everything we do. We're trying to make it inclusive. We have 100 tickets for people who are between jobs. We've already given quite a few of those away that are absolutely free. And we have a open source job boards working with us. And we've got a huge wall in a premium space that is going to be a job board. So it's not some little job board tucked away in a corner. It's right at the center of the event. And it's really about supporting the community as much as we can. So we've also hired in a printer so we can print out jobs through the conference and stick them up on the job board for people as we become aware of them. I'm not sure if anybody's got any more suggestions of what we can do, let me know. But at the moment, that seems to be the best we can do to help support people. We've also got community tickets to give away, and we've got student tickets to give away.
Fantastic. When you keep mentioning the tables, is this different from the usual kind of sponsor booth table in that you're encouraging people to like sit down and actually discuss
in
the show?
No, it's probably more like what you're used to at a FOSDEM, right? So if you go to FOSDEM, it's what you're used to. It's a table with two chairs, a pop-up banner, and people behind it talking to you. Okay. But it's an opportunity in that space. So they will be mixed up. We won't have an area that's the not-for-profits and an area that's the for-profits. Nobody's going to have the big, you know, swanky booth in the middle of the space that they broadcast from.
Okay.
It will just be a sort of community vibe to it, and everybody will be treated equally, whatever.
Does that mean, and I don't want to spread controversy amongst the pigeons by saying this, does that mean no sponsor talks as well?
There's no sponsor talks.
Excellent.
I don't believe in sponsor talk. Sorry.
No.
Oh, I think it's terrible. I hate it. So, you know, whether this model is sustainable is entirely dependent on the goodwill of the sponsors, but there are no sponsor talks. Not everybody came through a CFP process because there were some things we wanted to put in and were curated, but there are no sponsor talks.
I also noticed at the party, another person I've had on the show quite a few times, DJ Brian Bellendorf.
Few people know that.
You got it on the program.
I know. No. Few people know he's a DJ, though, and who he is. Right. The connection hasn't been made by many
direct
yet. It will
from
be on
Burning
the night. He DJs professionally.
Wow,
our DJs are professional.
I don't know how he's never mentioned that before.
Well, see, the things that I know about people, unfortunately, we thought we had DJ Fresh, and he was also a Kubernetes developer, which you may or may not know, and an engineering, I can't remember if he's a manager or director. So I'm hoping that we will have him next year with a bit more notice.
Okay. And I just wanted to, you've got a couple of slots on the program.
That's quite controversial. I didn't really want them. And it made me do it.
I was actually interested in two of them.
Mm-hmm. I think there are only two.
Well, you got a panel.
Don't
one
tell
as well.
Me. Anything else.
Firstly, one of them you've got specifically around EV charging. Is that something that interests you in particular, or?
So one of the things I didn't mention when I was talking about what's happened in the last 6 months, in 2021, it's hard to keep track of the years at the moment. In 2021, so we did a blueprint for the data center of the future using open technology, so software, hardware, data. Yeah. And we shared that at COP26, and it was really well received. And last year, we didn't quite manage to get this over the line before the end of the year. But Intel sponsored us on the sustainability side, and we did two things. One is an EV charging blueprint, and the other is societal value metrics. Okay. So those metrics will come out later this year, I hope. But the EV charging piece is a blueprint bringing together the different open standards, open source software, open hardware, open data. And we've worked quite a bit with the Open Charge Alliance in the Netherlands. And they will have a stand and a demo area at the conference, and they will be part of that discussion as well, talking about that they've got an open standard that hasn't yet been adopted in the UK, so we're hopeful it will be.
My wife used to cover smart cities, EV and urban vehicle technologies, and I wonder if she's come across any of it, but she's not actually covering that topic anymore, unfortunately.
Right. No, it's an interesting topic, though, and it is very topical as a topic.
Yeah. No, we went to one of our last trips into Ukraine before other things that have happened in the past year. We actually went to an EV charging manufacturer in Odessa, and they make them all there. And it was also quite fascinating because they were telling us about all the interoperability issues and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. The Open Charge Alliance does so much work around that with the standard side and trying to make sure it is interoperable, because you have all these companies coming into that market and they get bought by the big players. Yeah. And, you know, it gets closed down.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important that we see that opening up.
And weirdly, it's something I didn't realise, that there's still, I think, different plugs for each car.
Yeah,
stuff like,
I think
which is
Tesla's
odd.
Finally given theirs, I think they've opened up the specification, but when you had the charging points, so you could have a universal charging point, but it didn't matter because Tesla had their own plug. Mm. So you would always have to have two sockets to put them in, no matter what.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. And also, if you're driving, you want to be able to go cross-border. I mean, it's probably more important to Europeans than it is to us, but even if you're in Ireland, you know, you're going to want to go from north to south.
Yep.
So those kind of universalities of open and this space is really important, I think.
And it's one of those things around open standards that people forget about, that they're more common than we think. You know, the fact that even in the UK, you know, you can go and use the weird English plug everywhere instead of five different plugs or something. You know, these sort of open standards are things that people sometimes forget about when we discuss open.
Yeah.
So
totally.
On that, just to wrap up, I can see description coming soon, but you've got State of Open, from geopolitics to GDP.
Yeah.
Any salient talking points to bring up now? Haven't you written it yet?
I haven't written it. No, I absolutely haven't written it. And I didn't want to speak, actually, because I'm doing the plenaries and organising the conference.
Yeah,
and
fair enough.
They wanted something at the beginning to scene set how we got here and what we're doing, which is a lot of what we'll be talking about in the plenaries, but to take it in a slightly different direction so that we go into curation. So what we're going to do there is do a little bit more detail around where open source is today, and it's about the trajectory of the last 5 to 10 years where it's become the norm, it's become the standard, to use standard in a different context, but it has become the normal way to code. It's become the norm mm-hmm. in terms of software stacks. Most of it will be open source in most cases. And what we're looking at is, well, all these people have started using it, but do they really understand what it is and how to use it? And of course, the use case is what's important. You take the software, you use it in a safety critical environment, you use it in an environment that's regulated. You, the user, are responsible. Mm-hmm. And getting people to understand more about what that means and how you implement and how you use open source well is really important. And that will be a more technical kind of focus to the talk. And then Sarah Novotny and Eric Brewer will join me to talk about curation, which is becoming the general, the sort of generic term for that good hygiene and good governance. But in the keynotes, we're going to talk in the plenary session slightly differently. So we're going to talk about the future of open source. And we're going to look at that big picture conversation around, you know, the keynotes will very much be demonstrating how open source is fundamental to our infrastructure and enterprise and our national critical infrastructure. How did we get here? Where are we going? And how do we manage the future of it? And that's the policy level of the same conversation, where what we're thinking about is, you know, governments are regulated from a security perspective. The US did it first, so it's super exciting to have the White House. Their legislation has just been lifted and shifted, and a few changes that are controversial made to it, which are going through in the Cyber Resilience Act in the EU. And during the conference, I believe, we're going to see the consultation from DCMS come out. And I haven't mentioned this, but DCMS are going to have a couple of workshops on that consultation, which nobody will have seen in advance during the conference. So we want to look at that future. How do we make sure it's got a sustainable, with a small s, future? And we make sure that it, you know, it's well-funded, that the skills that need to be developed for people to be able to contribute are developed and taught in schools and beyond. And also how we give back and we make sure that the maintainers are supported with what they need.
And this is the sustain check, I guess. I did go to their last event, which was a while ago. Yeah.
2019 is the first one since. And I mean, there's so much to talk about. The other thing that I think I haven't mentioned in the tracks, I missed, and I don't know how I missed it, is the entrepreneurship room. And it's going to be quite different. It's going to look at the business of open source. We'll have 45-minute panel sessions. And then after the panel sessions, there'll be hosted round tables mm-hmm. with founders. So each table will have a founder on it. And we've got people like Peter Zeitzer, founder of Percona, coming in from the US. You know, we've got some quite big names mixed in with some more early stage founders. But it will be, I think, an unprecedented opportunity for people who want to understand the business of open source. You know, how you make money when you've given something away, how you build products, how you work with community, actually talking to people who are doing it day to day. And that content is then going to go into a MOOC that we're building with Strathclyde University.
Okay. Actually, one last question I forgot about earlier before we go into a kind of a wrap up and how people can find out more. I noticed, because it's something that is kind of usually quite missed at a lot of European and American events, the state of open source in Africa. So was there an effort to invite some people from that part of the world? So that's often the...
Not particularly. We just pushed out. We've got quite a diverse community, and we have somebody, Samson Gaudi, who's in Nigeria on our advisory board, and we get followed by quite a lot of people in emerging markets. Yeah. I think that the way we treated diversity and sustainability are quite different. So everybody's scoring for the CFP process, 10% of that was on sustainability. Mm-hmm. And as an environmental and the sustainable development goal sustainability, and 10% was on diversity, equity and inclusion. But we had this 10% for each of them. And then we briefed all the speakers, asking them to keep that in mind, even if they themselves didn't fit either of those criteria. But we've tried to put it at the heart of everything rather than have a diversity track or a community track or to, you know, the sustainability talks all the way through. And we have, I think this is probably a first also, we have Woodlands who are going to have a table. They're going to plant a deciduous tree in the west of England for each delegate. So we'll follow that up afterwards and we'll show people the tree's been planted. And, you know, this is really happening. It's not some sort of sales pitch. We can't do a proper measure this year as a first year conference of the footprint or the impact that we're having. But we've also, in the registration process, we've asked people to tell us how far they're traveling and what the principal means of travel is, so that we can get a bit closer to that for next year.
Yeah,
I'm not necessarily the world's greatest fan of offset, but this is an offset that I can legitimise as much as anybody ever can. And I can show what we're doing, and I will show what we're doing.
It's better
to
than
try
nothing,
our best.
Which is what
it's a lot better than nothing. So we're really grateful to that. I mean, Woodlands have sponsored that for us. So, you know, another act of kindness. So, see what I mean? It's not your normal conference, right?
No.
But I don't know how you explain that to people.
No, I think we had time for a bit of a reset the past couple of years of how we do events. And if you're going to do one, then do one for a purpose, not just because...
Exactly.
And I can see some really good sponsors and projects. Arm, of course, a still mostly British success story.
There's a little story I should tell you about Arm, actually. I know we're running out of time, so I'll be quick. Over the last 3 years, I've been talking to Peter Adams, who created something called Faces of Open Source, which is a photo exhibition primarily of US people. I think there's two people from the UK in it. And Peter and I have been talking about getting him over here to do a photo shoot.
Yep.
And it just hasn't worked out. So with his blessing... we are doing our own version that looks very different and has a different name. It's called State of Open because that's become a theme with us. So it's State of Open, the UK in 2023. It's focused only on people in software. And there's around 40 people from the UK software communities who've been photographed. It's been done by a 25-year-old award-winning photographer who's a teacher at Greenwich Uni. And we will be hanging large... some of the people, or all of the people who've been in that photo shoot, across one of the floors of the building. So that will be across the third floor. And each photo is accompanied by a QR code that takes you to a little bit on a website about them and a video of them talking about open source software. And Arm has very kindly sponsored that for
us. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So them, a lot of these people, I've had some of these people on the show, ISO Valent. I saw some at Base Row who have not been on the show, but I had a lot of chats with recently. Control Plane, Gnome, you'd mentioned. Nixos, who is a very interesting project. Sync.
Yeah, and their founder actually is going to be in the entrepreneurship room.
Okay. Sync, you mean?
No, well, Snick's founder is Guy Pajani. You know what Snick stands for? So now you know.
Oh, so I was going to say security.
At least so I was told. I hope that's right. When I'm saying that as if it's authority, that's what somebody in SNCC told me. So I always remember it. And they said, you know, you'll never forget it now. But Guy Pajani, who's the founder of that, is going to be in the security room.
Yeah.
You were on Nix before that, though. Their founder is going to be in the entrepreneurship room.
Yep. Actually, I think I heard about them at the last FOSDEM when someone was telling me how their entire laptop was reproducible, and I was quite fascinated.
Now there's some great people. I mean, I'm so excited because I've had so much support from people here in the UK, but from all over the world across the open communities.
Yeah.
And it's basically, we've raised this money, we've built this thing in a giant space. All the people who can provide you with the content, whether it's conference content, exhibition content, experience content, are going to be there. Yep. And now we just need all the communities to turn up. We need folk to be there.
And on that, so it's, I have to look because my screen's over here. Stateofopencon.com.
Yeah.
£199, which is not terrible, but London, and it's still an expensive city. So if you can't make it, there's also a free live stream, which is pretty cool. Still tickets available?
Yes, plenty of tickets. I have no idea. I won't look. I'm not looking at how many I sold. I don't want to know. I'm working as hard as I can, and it'll be the same whether I know or not.
So free live stream and post-event on demand as well. So
yes,
if you do miss those things, or if you miss some of it because you're there and you can't see all of it at once, then you can catch up afterwards as well. And maybe I'd make 2 hours of it, as we discussed.
And I hope you do. I hope you do, because you'll get a chance just to get the vibe of it. And I think the lesson I've learned from this is when you do something disruptive or different, people won't understand. And it takes time to get them to understand what it is and to find a way to explain it to them. And I think the best way is going to be word of mouth after people have been at it. So come along, see it. And, you know, there are different kinds of free tickets available as well if the 199 is out of your reach.
Yep.
But I'm hoping that for most people, it will be affordable.
Yeah, community and free tickets as well. So fantastic. Yeah. Awesome. Well, let's hope that next year we're talking about it again.
You too. Brilliant. Yeah. Thank you very much,
Good
Chris.
Good luck. No worries. Thank you. That was my interview. Little updates from me, not so much since last week. Still wrapping up quite a few things. I'm nearly finished with two new posts and videos, one on alternative browsers and one on writing with IntelliJ. And I'm nearly done. So many nearly done's on my new website and a whole bunch of new graphics and branding for my videos. So that is all coming in the next week or so. It's always hard to say, but I'm getting very, very close. But in the meantime, I have done a few videos. I looked at Retool just Monday gone, which took me a while to look at for the first time. It was so-so, but anyway, I don't want to spoil the punchline. I also looked at Spline for creating 3D in the browser and learning synths with Ableton, which was actually super fun. I really enjoyed that one, actually. This week, this episode is probably releasing on Thursday. So Friday of this week of release, which is the 27th of January, I'll be looking live on Twitch and also back on YouTube again at ScumVM and working my way through a few classic text adventure games, starting with Monkey Island. So I'm really looking forward to that. You can find all these details on christianchiller.com. Still on the old, slightly out of date website for now, but more to come very soon. And if you don't find the details there, which you probably won't, then you can find my social networking contacts there and you'll see updates there instead. But until next time, thank you very much for joining me, everybody. Take care.
I hope you enjoyed the show. Find out more about me at christianchiller.com, where you can find show notes, sign up for my newsletter, and find all of my writing, games, work, and video links. There's also details on how to get in touch with me. And if you want to get even closer to what I do, join my Discord server for behind-the-scenes discussions and helping me produce my shows and work.